Well, it's a good question. Why not begin living your life now? We started this series last week called One Month to Live, and last week we looked at the idea, the concept of living passionately. Let's go all in. Let's not leave anything to waste, or let's not leave anything behind on the table. But so many people we just sort of go through the motions in life, and we just sort of let life happen to us rather than us happening to our lives. And today we're just going to kind of continue right on and ask the question, if you got the news, the diagnosis, whatever, you just got the notice that you only had 30 more days to live, just one more month, what would change? What would you begin to think about? What are the things that you're not doing now that you would begin doing? And what are the things that you're doing now that you'd stop? I tell you, this series is hit pretty close to home for me today. We lost my grandmother on Tuesday. Very unexpected. So since the last time when we started this series, and I mentioned it, we don't know. We have no guarantees. And my sweet grandmother passed away. She's probably had the biggest influence in my life as far as me entering the ministry and things of that nature. Just very supportive, huge impact in my life. And it's a big loss for us. But if we think about, she was one of those people who lived with that kind of urgency. She was one of those people that didn't leave anything behind, didn't want to waste any time. And it's something we really don't think about that often. You know, how much time do I have left? When is it going to happen? When, you know, we live as though it's just life is going to go on forever. And we don't ever have to think about it. But none of us is guaranteed another moment. None of us is guaranteed another day. And the Bible says our lives are like a mist that's here for a moment and then it's gone. I was, last year sometime, we lived in Illinois. I was walking around this little small town cemetery. It's one of these things that I kind of like to do is walk around these old tombstones and read the epitaph that people had left behind for their loved ones. And so I'm kind of looking at these tombstones and I'm out there and there's this really old tombstone. I think it's marble because with the rain, it's just sort of eroded a little bit. And so it just kind of looks crumbly and those things. And so it's probably 100, 150 years old, something like that. And I'm looking at this tombstone and the inscription on it's kind of hard to read. You kind of rub it a little bit to see what it says. And what I could make out, it said, "Shed no tears for me, for as I am now, soon you will be." There's something just really creepy about that. You stand there, you know. I don't like to go there very often, you know. But when you think about it, it's right. It's true. It's true. Every one of us is going to die if Christ doesn't come back first. Every single person in this room is going to have to face death. And so I talk about a topic today that probably hits all of us. There's one thing that every one of us have in common. We've got lots of differences, lots of different backgrounds, but there's one thing that's the same with all of us, and that is that we all want to be loved. Every person, you may, you know, if you're a 12-year-old boy, maybe you deny that all day long. But deep down, all of us have a desire, I believe a God-given desire, a craving for love from other people and certainly from our God. And so that's the majority theme, the major theme in the movies that we watch, the songs that we listen to, books that we read. It's all about finding that one person and living happily ever after, riding off into the sunset. And I can remember as a kid, I mean, when I was like, you know, probably about that time. So girls weren't gross anymore. They smelled nice and those things. So I got to this point where I kind of liked girls, but didn't know how to talk to them or anything like that. And I remember as a boy who grew up in church, because I did, man. I mean, it was just could have been born in the church nursery. We were there constantly. So I grew up that VBS, Sunday school, Sunday morning church, Sunday night church, all that stuff. Summer camp. I remember going to church and, man, we just, you know, you never praise Jesus like you do at a youth camp, but we were there, and that was my background. But I remember one night we lived out on the farm, so I was probably 14, 15 years old, something like that. And I remember sitting outside and kind of watching the clouds roll in. There's a storm or something coming in, and I was just got to thinking about, you know, the promise in Scripture. Jesus says, "Behold, I'm coming soon." And I just remember those from church camp. You know, "Behold, he's coming soon. He's going to come back and take us to be with him." And I thought, man, this is so cool. It sounds so awesome that Jesus is going to come back and take us, right? We get to go to heaven and all those things. And I remember having this thought of like, I think that's cool, but I really don't want Jesus to come back before I get married. If I could just find that one person and just experience married life, I would really like to do that before I would die or before Jesus would come back or whatever. Everybody, all of us, we want to find that person. I've heard that there are over 1,500 matchmaking websites online now. And you've probably seen some of the commercials for them because they're hilarious. But one is called farmersonly.com. I saw one for gluten-free singles, you know, just bringing people together. There's like cat lovers only and dog lovers only. And there's, you know, if you're into Star Trek, you can get it together. And I mean, there's just over 1,500 different areas of interest for people to sign up. And you know, maybe you don't. If you don't, I'm going to fill you in. But maybe some of you are on some of these websites. I don't know. But what you do, you sign up, you pay them money. You pay these people money and you go in and you create a profile. And so you say, this is me, this is the things I like, things I don't like. I like Italian food, I like, you know, to go walks on the beach or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you create this profile and you're paying them money to match them with someone else who shares interests that you share. So you both like cats, you both are gluten-free or whatever, they put you together, and I would argue, you know, with all this stuff, I mean, the matchmaking websites, the cell phone apps, I mean, all the stuff that we've got, all the things that we have, I would say it has never been easier right now. It has never been easier to fall in love than it is today. It's never been easier to fall in love than it is today, but I would argue that it's harder to stay in love than it's ever been. You know, it's easy to fall in love. But what do you need to fall in love? You know, I mean, you just need a pulse, you know. I was like, man, I love this jacket. You know, I love this cheesecake. I love this girl. I love this guy. I love. We just kind of throw it around. It's just, you just got to be breathing and you can fall in love. But it's harder, I would argue, harder to stay in love than it's ever been. As I think about this series and I think about all of us who are married or those of us who are in relationships, maybe for you marriage is something that you would like. You think it's off in the distance. And I think if you got the news this week, the diagnosis is in, you've got 1 month to live, how would it impact your relationship? What would change? What would be different? What are the things that you're not doing now that you'd start doing? What are the things that you're doing now that you'd stop? When it comes to our marriages, and that's, I want that to be the primary push of this message. I believe that we would make it a priority to love completely. You know, as I think about, I was talking to Neil Johnstone before the service. We were talking about fights. You know, when you married couples fight, and he said, you know, I've never had a. All my fights with my wife have been dumb fights. You know, there's never been one that I'm like, yeah, that was important. That was a good fight that we had. You know, they were all dumb fights, stupid stuff. I think if I had 1 month to live, I don't think we'd fight. I don't think we would focus on differences and things. If you knew what would change, I bet I could rattle off a few things. I bet I could rattle off a few things in your relationship that would change. I bet you would argue less. You'd fight. You probably wouldn't fight. I bet you'd spend more time together. You would savor those moments that you've got left. I bet you probably say some things that you've needed to say for a long time. But you've kept it back because your pride or whatever, those things that, or you just feel weird about it or you don't want to go there. Let's just ignore the big elephant in the room and not talk about it. I bet you'd say those things. Don't you wish we could just do those things now? Don't you just wish we could just enjoy life all the time? You ever see these couples that have been married like 100 years, and they're old and they're wrinkled and they're walking down the aisle at Walmart together? They're down the ointment aisle, you know, looking for denture cream or whatever. and just sort of waddle along there, and they're holding hands. You say, "Aw." You know, my wife says, "Aw, get over here and hold my hand right now, you know. He gets on me. But every time you see one of those couples, every time you see one of those couples, you think to yourself, or at least I do, I think to myself, man, I hope I can have that one of these days. You ever think, I hope, I want it. Maybe it's possible. I think I could, but will I? I don't know. Actually, I found this video that I want to share with you of a couple. Maybe this could be you one day. Check this out. Isn't that great? You know, maybe you've seen that video before. It's floated around on Facebook. That's Marlo and Frances Cowan. They're both in their 90s. They've been married over 68 years. And, you know, there's part of us that sees that, and I believe that we see that and say, man, I hope I can have that someday. You know, I hope that after 68 years or whatever, we're both old and wrinkly and we're slapping each other around on the bottom, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, because you can get away with that when you're 90, you know. Nobody gets that pass when you're 20, but you're 90, they don't care anymore. It's just whatever. You get a free pass. But the problem is, a lot of us, we look at that and we say, I want that. But will I have it? Is it possible for me? I hope so. You look at the divorce rate, man, our background, you know, our parents were divorced, we're messed up, we're dysfunctional, there's this stuff, our marriage right now, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. I love to have that, but will I? I don't know. But Jesus actually gives us some instructions for how to have that kind of relationship. And it's just one little verse. And, you know, a lot of times I like to really dig deep in the scriptures and give a lot of meat. Today I just got a couple of verses. That's all we need. That's all we need. And it's just one little verse. And it's in John 13, verse 34. And it's really simple. But he starts it off like this. He says, a new command I give you. And he's about to lay it on us. So this is it. He says, I'm getting you ready. I'm going to focus your hearts and your minds. I'm going to spell it out for you right here. A new command I give you. This is it. And he says, love one another. Love one another. That's it? Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's the instruction. Somebody say, well, that's the problem. I don't love them anymore. You know, the love that we had is now gone. And I would say, oh, you mean you don't feel anything anymore? Because that's what you're saying. If you say, I don't love this person anymore, what you're really saying is, I'm not feeling it. Because love is not a feeling. That's how we think about it. We think it's love is something that just kind of happens to me. It's something I really can't control. I fall into love or fall out of love, sort of like I tripped and fell. You know, into a hole, or I fell out of my chair or something. But notice what Jesus does. He says, love one another. And it's interesting because he uses that word in a way that we rarely see it used. He takes a word that's normally used as a noun, and he uses it as a verb. Normally we say, I love you. He doesn't say it that way. He uses it as an action. It's an action word. He says, this is something you do. Do it. Love one another. It's not something that just happens to us. It's an intentional love. We do this. We love one another. He's telling us something that seems so simple, and yet it is so incredibly complex. He's describing what love is, and I want you to remember this, that love is doing, not feeling. It is doing, not feeling. In other words, we make love. We make it happen. It's a verb. You say, that's the problem. We fell out of love. Well, what are you doing about it? If you're not feeling it anymore, what are you doing about it? Whenever I meet with couples who are getting ready to get married, they've asked me to do the wedding and those things. One thing that I always like to ask is, I say, tell me about your first date. What was the first thing that you did together? How did you meet? Tell me your story a little bit. And it's so funny to listen to these, because you always kind of get similar responses. You know, they're different. But guys, what do you do when you're getting ready for a date? You got this girl, you've asked her out, she said yes, you're getting ready for it, and it's all about trying to impress her. You know, you're going to dress up nice, and you're going to make yourself smell good, and you're going to clean your car out and all this stuff to pick her up, and you're going to take her somewhere nice. I've never heard of anybody. I saw a Dave Ramsey article online this week that said, should you use coupons on a first date? I'm like, I've never seen anybody use a coupon on a first date, man. That's just bad, you know. But you want to impress them. So you do these things, and ladies, you know, my lands, I never knew how much time a woman could spend in the bathroom until I got married. And she lives there, you know, she's always doing stuff and popping stuff and pulling things and plucking stuff. No, she doesn't. She doesn't. She pops things on me is what she does. But you know, they do. You know, you're always about smelling nice and looking nice, and you're doing all these things because you just want to get their attention. You want to capture that other person's attention. You want them focused on you, man. You want their total, absolute attention and affection. And I would ask you guys, if you're married, if you're sitting here and you're married today, what are you doing to try to win your wife's heart? What are you doing on a daily basis to try to win your wife over and over and over again? And ladies, what are you doing to capture your husband's affection? And you know what I'm talking about. You remember your first date, how much time you spent trying to impress that person. When did that stop? And why did it stop? Why did we stop trying to win the other person and reach the other person? You might say, well, that's all fine and good, but what are we supposed to do? You know, give me three steps to fix my marriage. You know, what's the ABC? What's the things? And what's the five things that I should do? Maybe if I only had a month to live, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give you three steps. I'm not going to give you a list of things. I probably could give you some things to think about, but you could go down to any bookstore and you can pull any relationship help book off the shelf, and it's full of good stuff. You can learn how to have better communication, or learn how to forgive, or how to put spice back in your love life, or whatever. I'm not going to give you that. What I am going to give you is this. John 13:34, Jesus said, love one another. And he gives us a little description. He says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. How did Jesus love us? Here's a big word. This is kind of a scary word, but it's a big word. He loved us sacrificially, meaning he gave it all. He gave us his all. He went all the way to the cross and paid the final price to show us he loved us, to redeem us, to save us from ourselves, from our sin. You want to love completely. I mean, Jesus gives us the definition of love. You want to have a happy, lasting marriage. You want to grow old and hold hands together for a lifetime. Love is doing, not feeling. It's about what you do. It's about what you put in. It's about the effort and the pushing through. And even when I'm not feeling it, it's that you push through anyway. And you push harder because you are trying to win that person's heart again and again and again. And you give and you give until you can't give anymore. You love sacrificially. Love one another. When Megan and I were dating, we're kind of old school, and so one of the things that was important to me was to ask her dad if I could marry her. So I was excited about this. I hadn't bought a ring yet or anything like that, but I knew that she was the one. And I love Megan's dad. He's such a great man. He's been a pastor all of his adult life. He's just a wonderful, wonderful person. I hope I could be like him someday. But his words, when I sitting down, I remember we were watching TV together, just me and him in their living room, and I've been sitting there all day thinking about how I'm going to ask him. My hands are just sweating like crazy, and I'm just nervous, and I'm shaking. And he probably knew the whole time, you know. He probably saw that and knew it was coming, but he just wanted to taunt me a little bit. But we sat there, and I remember I finally got to the point where I asked him. I said, you know, I've been meaning to ask you a question. And I said, I just would like to know if I could ask your daughter to be my wife. And his words to me at that time, I didn't quite get it at the time. This is what he said. Because I was expecting like the laundry list. You know, well, you're going to be a provider, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and all these things, and blah, blah. I mean, I was just preparing myself for that. He didn't give me any of that. This is what he said. He said, he had kind of a tear in his eye, and he said, yes, if you'll promise to love her. And I thought, well, of course, you know. I mean, I'm getting ready to go drop some serious money, which to me is like, you know, not that much. But I'm getting ready to go buy this ring, man. She is smoking hot. I am excited. You know, we are ready to go. You know, I want to marry this girl. We're going to have fun. We're going to build a life. Of course I'm going to love her. I got stars in my eyes. You know, it's flying out of my ears. I love her. You know, what do you... Now after 10 years of marriage, I get what he was saying. I get it. You see, at first everything is new and it's different and it's exciting, and Megan and I had never been together, and so before we were married, we saved it. But you add a little stress, add a little financial pressure. You know, we were first married, a job I was in, it was tough. We were in a small, struggling church that split, and it was a mess, and all of a sudden, surprise, as a kid. And you go on a job change, we moved to Illinois, and surprise, another kid, and then mortgage and job change, and surprise, another kid. You'd think we'd have figured that out by now. But as the years go by, one thing I've learned is that getting married is so easy. It is so easy to get married. Falling in love is so easy. Staying in love works when you learn that love is doing, not feeling. Staying married requires you to know that love is doing, not feeling. And Jesus, he words it this way. The Apostle Paul says the same thing, but it just has, the way Paul words it, it just almost has a barb on it. It just kind of sticks. And he writes this in Ephesians 5:21. A scripture has been taken out of context and misused in a lot of different ways to hurt different people. But Ephesians 5:21 says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And he goes on to talk about husbands loving their wives and wives respecting their husbands. But the picture that you get from what Paul is saying here, submit to one another out of reverence for the Lord Jesus. The picture is this: it's you first. No, you first. No, you first. No, you first. No, you. No, you. Where you want to eat? I don't care. You pick. No, you first. You first. You first. It's just that you first mentality of I'm putting your needs above mine. I'm putting your priorities above mine. I'm putting your feelings above mine. And I'm not going to worry about how my needs are going to get met. And what happens when you do that, you get this beautiful picture. When you're saying you first, no, you, no, you, no, you. Is that everybody's needs, both of the needs are met because the other person is making it their commitment, their responsibility to meet your needs, and you're meeting theirs. And it's beautiful, and it's awesome, and it's rare. It's very rare to see it. We hardly ever see it, but when you see it, you know it. You know that you've seen it. You know that you've seen it. And man, we jump in and out of marriage like it's nothing. We treat it like a contract. You know what a contract is? I had to sign one when I bought my house. You're entering into an agreement with someone, and it basically lays out the terms. You do this, and I'm going to do this. And as long as you keep doing this, I'll keep doing that. That's how a contract works. You hold up your end of the bargain, I'll hold up my end of the bargain. But if you stop doing yours, then I'm going to stop doing mine, and the contract is broken. Contracts are based on distrust. We're going to spell this all out right now so that there's no questions. This is the way it's going to go, and we treat marriage like that. You do your part, and I will do mine. You stop doing yours, I'm going to stop doing mine. But marriage isn't a contract. Never has been. It never will be. Marriage is a covenant. And where a contract is based on distrust, a covenant is based on commitment. It's saying, I'm going to show up. And I'm going to continue to show up, even when you're at your worst. Even when I don't feel like it. Even when I'm tired and the world has beat me up, I'm going to continue to show up because I'm committed to you. Because no matter what, I will be there. What would happen if you had 30 more days to live? How would your relationship change? What would you start doing? What would you stop doing? The key to staying in love is not finding the right person. I think God gives us freedom. People say, oh, God's got that one person out there for you. I think that's bunk. I think you're free to marry whoever you want. God's kind of given us the playlist. But we have some freedom. It's finding someone who is committed to becoming the right person. While you work on becoming the right person, is finding someone who's not afraid to put you first while you overcome your fear of putting them first. It's about love being about doing, not about feeling. And when you start doing, the feelings come back. And they come back, and they come back. I've talked to couples who've been married 60, 70 years, and those that had those rock-solid relationships, they all say the same thing. They say, you know, the feelings, they kind of ebb and flow a little bit. You have seasons. But they say if you're faithful, if you remain committed, if you keep going back and doing the things that made you fall in love in the first place, those feelings come back. And it's always fresh and it's always exciting again and again and again. As a pastor, in the past, I've been asked to do a lot of weddings. And I used to try to say yes to everybody because I always wanted to build a relationship. And I love weddings and all this. In the summer of 2013, I had 8 weddings, 8 weekends, back to back to back, and I thought, I don't think I'm going to do this anymore, but I love weddings, and I love having that opportunity to get to know couples. But often we get people who are outside the church that come and ask to have their weddings, and we want to accommodate, but one of the requirements that I have is that if you're going to get married here, if I'm going to marry you, you've got to come meet with us. You want to make sure that you're, you know, everything's on the up and up. You're not just marrying your secretary while your wife's at home with the kids or whatever. You know, we want to make sure this is all good. And so we have to meet with you. We want to know your story. But then also we require that you have premarital counseling. And one of the neatest things that happen when we get together for those times, lots of uncovering stuff and growing closer. And it's really cool and it's encouraging. And hopefully we help give couples the tools to give them the best possible chance at staying in love. And every once in a while, I have a couple that are not believers. And I tell you, it's tricky. And we get all kinds of theological debates, but it is really tough. And I'll get one of these couples. I had one a couple of years ago. And he was not a believer. He would say, I'm an atheist. She was on the fence. She would say, I'm maybe more of an agnostic. I don't know. Maybe there's a God, maybe there's not, but I don't really know. They've been living together for years. He's got kids. She's got kids, his and hers. I think they maybe had one together. It's kind of like modern-day Brady Bunch, all kinds of messed up situation. And we're meeting, and I asked them, I said, I just have to ask. They've been living together like 15 years. I said, I just have to ask. I said, why now and why here? It seems like what you guys got is maybe working. You're in a house. You've been together so long. You're not even sure if you believe in God. Why are you coming to me? Why are you coming to the church? Why not go down to the courthouse? Why change the situation at all if it's working for you? And they both kind of looked at me. And he kind of just shrugged. And he said, well, you have to ask her. She explained it better than I can. And she said, well, I know this probably sounds stupid. He said, but I have just, I've seen other people who are married, and when they're part of a church, and they got married in the church, and they go to a church, it just seems like they just have these great marriages. It just seems like they're so happy and everything. And I just thought, maybe if we try to do what they did, maybe we can have what they have. And I had a great opportunity. It was a great opportunity to share the gospel with them that day and kind of help them fill in the gaps a little bit about why they saw what they saw. And I hope that that is taking root and growing. But I thought, wow, you know, they have obviously, this couple has obviously met someone who got it right. They met someone that's got it right. Could you imagine what would happen if the world, if our communities out there, outside, if they looked at us and they said, I don't know exactly what they have, but I would like that. If they looked at our marriages, our relationships, and said, I don't know what makes them different, what is ticking there, but I really want that for us. Can you imagine how many changed lives? Can your kids say that? Can your kids say that? Can your friends? We can miss out on so much life because we're miserable. We're having these dumb fights and we're hung up on this stupid stuff. What's it going to take to get your marriage on track? What's it going to take? What's it going to take for you to stay in love forever? It's about remembering that love is doing, not feeling. And when you do, the feelings come back. Let's pray.